Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Durance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I hope everyone enjoyed the play-in music today, the pre-intro musical interlude that we had.
Well, it was all of our
classic rejoiners.
All of our favorite rights-free rejoiners, but in full.
It's very exciting.
And so what was the last 10 minutes like for you, Jamie? Just me looking over at you every 5 seconds and saying, Are we on?
And then also you trying to hide your candy wrappers from the camera.
Which you enjoyed. Also, so
it's the Mount Vesuvius you've got there of chocolate.
Yeah. It's the new. So again, as my wife, by the way, listened to the program, unfortunately. It was the first time she'd listened to the program in a long time. And she left me.
What? So now you are single. you were like that was like the gift of prophecy or something. You're like, wait, why did I say I'm single? And then it came true.
So I had a tough weekend.
Did she actually hear it live?
No. I
sent it to her.
I just wanted to be weird about it. So as we've discussed last week, I don't have kids. And so when I have access to Halloween candy, I seize the opportunity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have next door. They still have some leftover Halloween candy in the News 11:30 newsroom. So I come in and I walk in and I grab a few slices of chocolate and I eat them while me and Jamie are catching up.
A few slices of chocolate.
It's not slices, bro.
What do you mean?
Pieces.
Well, did they come off a larger hole?
I don't know.
No. No.
Are you sure?
Like they stamp it in a mold.
Are you sure?
And then you break them off. You break a piece off.
So a few slices of chocolate.
Okay.
And I finish them and I think, you know, I would really like a few more. So I go to my trusty co-host and I say, hey, to spare me the embarrassment, will you walk in and grab me a couple more? I don't want to be the guy who went back twice for chocolate. Jamie.
And I came through.
Hey,
came through in the clutch.
This is why they say you're a glue guy.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Ultimate team player over here. It's a big show today, coming off a weekend. Canucks are going to practice today. Of course, they played over the weekend. I'm very excited also at 1 o'clock. We're going to have Dave Hall from Canucks Army on the station who covers the Canucks prospects and Abbotsford Canucks for Canucks Army. And there's a lot going on
with
Abbotsford.
Yeah, there's some really interesting Abbotsford stories, storylines to get into here.
Are you laughing at the text that says slices of chocolate? This is why you're single, bro.
No, but that's good.
So lots to get into today on the show, and we'll take your texts as well. But let's go, if we can, right in to the whiteboard. No, we're not going to go right into the whiteboard.
Wait, I can do them. I was going to sing it.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 4th. We'll start with the headlines, and we don't have to go too much into it. It's been a couple of days now, obviously, but the Canucks get a win in San Jose 3-2 over the Sharks. I think it's fair to say the process left a lot to be desired in that one, especially, obviously, coming off the 6-0 beatdown at the hands of the New Jersey Devils. They were just never really able to. It's one thing to have a one goal win, whatever, that happens, right? Even if you're a much better team, that happens. They were just never able to really take control of that game. Even in the first period where the shot attempts were heavily skewed in their favor and the shots on goal, right? There were a lot of counterattacks by the Sharks that were dangerous. And then over the latter two periods, I mean, the Sharks were kind of right there with them and they had to pull it out by the skin of their teeth towards the end there with a Pugh Suter goal.
So I thought process-wise it was fine in that, aside from about 10 minutes at the start of the second period, so the first half of the second period was the only 10 minutes of hockey that the Canucks played where I thought, ooh, they're really not playing well. Other than that, it was like gaps in defensive coverage, right? Certainly the Sharks were able to attack them off the rush, which, you know, is becoming a trend here, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, it's like teams think that they can skate with speed and manufacture chances against the grain against Vancouver's defenders, and too frequently they've been right. The Sharks weren't, ultimately, but they had a lot of pressure that they were able to apply by sort of emphasizing a vertical counterattack against the Canucks. They had chances that way. They had chances at chances that way. They didn't ultimately score their goals that way, right?
No.
So, you know, it wasn't successful, but it certainly caused, I think, a fair bit of concern if you were watching it closely from the perspective of where this Canucks team needs to improve. The fact, though, is the Canucks, like, ably controlled that game. Like, I thought it looked very clear that they were a significantly superior side in a totally different weight class.
I don't really agree with that, to be honest.
Really?
I thought they struggled to show that in the way that you would want. I think if you were dropped in not knowing, you know, you'd just woken up from a coma or something for 3 years. You had no idea what the respective statuses of these two teams were. I don't think you would have come away being like, wow, the Canucks are a way better team.
Oh, I thought so.
Ugh, I don't know.
I really did. I just think there were certain things, certain areas where this Canucks team has been, you know, just sloppy, inconsistent, that sort of conspired to keep that game more interesting than it really was. And sort of among them, I'd list the power play, even though I thought the power play actually showed some signs of life. To be totally honest with you, at least they were playing direct. At least they were manufacturing shots. At least there wasn't like a lot of ponderous one guy holding the puck. They were actually snapping it around with some intention, it felt like, for the first time this season.
They got set up. They got set up. That's always a nice thing for the power play.
8 shot attempts across 2 or 4 minutes of work. I mean, for this team, that's like, you know, fantastic relative to what we've seen for most of this season. And then the defensive gaps. I mean, I thought that was the only part of the game that I was like, what is going on here? Like, what is going on that Fabian Zetterlund is that alone in the slot as time expires? Like, the Canucks are lucky he whiffed on that slot feed, because that would have been a very high danger opportunity.
I don't know where Tyler Myers is going on that one with 2 seconds left in the game, chasing below the goal line there. That's a mystery to me.
Be careful with that. You might have to share a can of nuts with him. What was he doing? So the problem, though, is, Jamie, is that it's just like every game this team is making the sorts of preposterously simple errors that it felt like they almost never made last season. And as a result, you're getting, you know, outcomes like Saturday night's game where it's like the Canucks win. They win in regulation. It's their 4th regulation win of the season. But all those regulation wins are against the Sharks and the Flyers and the Sharks and the Flyers and the Blackhawks and, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, like a who's who of NHL lottery teams, right? Those are the only teams that the Canucks have been able to finish off after 60 minutes through the first 10 games of the season. And they rarely have looked good doing it. You know, The full 60 minutes is like, I honestly always roll my eyes when I hear the phrase full 60 minutes. It's just too hard. This league's too hard. But we haven't just seen like a really clean, consistent identity performance from this team yet. We still didn't see one on Saturday. And instead, we got treated to this game against a doormat hockey club where it felt like the Canucks were taking the most painful possible path to victory the whole way through. Like, I'm sure that was absolute misery for most of the Canucks fans watching it, until, of course, Pew Suter scores.
Yeah, exciting ending. But even like the exciting ending, the Jake DeBrusk one should have been the exciting ending, right?
Totally.
And then they put themselves in a situation where they need another late goal from Pew Suter.
And they mess up the 6-on-5 coverage, and then they do it again. They just got away from it. The Pew Suter response shift was, I mean, look, there's like strands of good hockey that you can pull from every performance this team has put out there. And obviously they're at a 650 point percentage. They're winning games, right? They're in a good spot. They've positioned themselves well through the first 10 games. It's just that at no point have they like inspired anything. I would say inspired confidence, but it's like, there's no inspiration in their game. There's nothing to like glom onto or hang on to or hang your hat on from a, I'm looking forward to the Canucks game because of this, or this is the reason why I'm believing in this team, other than Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek, I suppose, right?
Well, so it's like, and Quinn Hughes. Nobody's turning on the Canucks games. They're like, I can't wait to watch Phil Hronek here.
Well, fair enough.
They're saying they want to watch Quinn Hughes.
I'm thinking about it tactically, the top pair.
Sure.
Right? And so no one's turning on the TV to, wow, you're throwing shots at the
it's
Canucks.
It's true.
You are.
He's been good, but I'm just saying, it's not like a ticket draw or a viewer draw right
now. Hey, I'm going to call you the San Jose Sharks with the way you're ventilating the Canucks blue line. Anyway, but so we get to this sort of point, and I wrote about this at The Athletic today, my latest column, which is that, you know, in some ways, the fact that the Canucks' start has been so inconsistent and so uninspiring is actually something that I kind of think is promising. Because if they're racking up points at this clip while playing not great hockey,
mm-hmm.
right? And the way that they're not playing well, right? The things about the Canucks game that are holding them back, you know, whether it's Shelov's his goaltending, right? And we think Thatcher Demko comes back at some point in the next 3 to 4 weeks or whatever. If it's the power play, and we know from 5 years of work that this group is going to probably finish somewhere between 19 and 22% on mm-hmm. the power play, no matter what it looks like over a 10-game sample. If it's because, you know, Pettersson and JT Miller, like JT Miller looks less than 100%, Pettersson looks like a shell of himself. It's like, well, most likely those are still very, very good players who win a whole host of games for this team.
You certainly hope so.
As the sample expands. And so it's like, if you're racking up results like this while the wind is against you, when it inevitably goes the other way over 82 games and there's wind at your back, that's where, you know, you go on a run where this team, in my opinion, has now built this baseline, this margin for error, which we talked about, that even though they've run impurely in a whole host of different ways in the early part of the season, they're still kind of getting results. And even if it looks like a zombie stumble, even if it's not a lot to look at, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes this is what it looks like to actually be a better team.
Well, that's one of the great cliches in hockey, right? It's like, hey, good teams, really good teams, find a way to pick up points and win games even when they're not at their best.
100%.
And it's a cliche, but there's some truth to it as well. Now, there's a breaking point for that, right? Where if it's like you're 25 or 30 games in and you haven't played your best, it's like, there might be some cause for significant concern here. But
yeah, we're not at that point yet.
No, exactly. And there is something to be said. And, you know, I do want to have a bit of this conversation in the next segment,
sure,
as well, but it's not as if there's these giant red flags in their underlying performance either, right? And so, because sometimes you see that where teams are kind of pulling rabbits out of their hat and winning points, but their underlying numbers look horrible, and then you start, even at 10 games in, start to get, I don't know if this is going to happen. That's not the case for the Canucks, and we can go into a little more depth in that later in the show, but it just overall, it feels like last year they were playing probably at the very height of their ceiling, right? And Jim Rutherford said at the beginning of the year, it was a theme all season. They're getting the absolute most out of that group of players, the best results they could possibly ask for. Now, they're not at the floor, the very floor, obviously, but they're a lot closer to the floor than the ceiling. And so I think you're seeing just what it looks like when a pretty good team is not performing up to their standards. They're still picking up point, but it also leaves the fans wanting a lot more when they're tuning in.
Yeah, I wonder though if we're at more of a baseline. And I guess the other thing I'd say is the one qualifier that I have here is that at the end of the day, I do need to see them start to pick up some points against good teams.
Yep.
You know, before I'm really taking this theory about sort of this is what it looks like and they'll start to get hot when it matters, or once the sort of wind blows in their direction in more once they're more favorable winds behind the Canucks, they'll start to go on a run. They do need to at least like start to occasionally beat teams that aren't, you know, very likely to be bottom
yep.
10 teams and ideally in regulation.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an important caveat to put in all of the positive conversation, right? Is the quality of competition faced so far.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they don't have a clear victory yet.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're underwater by goal differential through 10 games, but they're winning a ton of games. So it's just this weird moment where, in some ways, the fact that it's been so difficult to watch and uninspiring, I actually take some heart in that because of what the results have looked like and because I think we should know that there's a lot more to this group than what they've shown us through 10 games.
Other things I'll put in the headlines here, of course, their California road trip continues in Anaheim tomorrow night. They're practicing today at 1.
Harmon Dial will be there, so we'll have
we'll
have some lines and stuff.
And we'll talk more about the game, obviously, on tomorrow's show, but you know, if we're waiting to see wins against quality teams, they're not going to be able to do it tomorrow. Ducks have some major issues that are partly being masked by Lucas Dostal and Nat right now, so they'll take on Anaheim tomorrow. And then the other thing that I think warrants a headline mention here coming out of the weekend is Jonathan Lekker-Mackey, scoring twice yesterday in an Abbotsford loss to San Diego. 4 goals in 6 games for Abbotsford now, as well as 34 shots on goal in those 6 games after he missed a few at the start of the year because of illness. So 3 of those goals are on the power play. And all of a sudden, I think he's putting himself in the conversation to be a call-up option sooner rather than later with some of those stats.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Dave about this. You know, Neil Zaman was waived over the weekend and cleared, which I think is pretty interesting. I thought he might be a 50-50. Like, I thought there was a decent chance that he might be claimed given his age, size, speed, penalty killing ability to fill in at a premium position. But when you clear waivers, man, like, that tells you a lot, right? Like, Amon, just a guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but that would seem to imply to me that, you know, with him DFA'd, like, are they really going to leave Suter at fourth line center given how he looked in the top six? Like, mm-hmm. that feels to me to be like an interesting sort of question here. And does that sort of point to Atu Ratu maybe getting a shot again?
Mm-hmm.
As for Lekker-Mackey, he's played well, generating a bucket load of shots, and we'll talk to Dave about this. Most of what he's doing offensively is coming on the power play.
Yes.
And in fact, there do appear to be some defensive gaps in his 5-on-5 game. So for me anyway, sort of where this is trending, I think probably premature for him to be called up, but obviously something that the organization can begin to think about, especially because, hey, a guy who's cooking on the power play.
Well, that's the thing.
Generating
right?
shots on the power, that sounds great.
I think in normal circumstances, that's a huge grain of salt to put on. Like, hey, prospect who's scoring a lot in Abbotsford, should he come up? It's like, well, it's mostly power play. It's like, wait, a guy who's just unloading shots and scoring on the power play? That actually sounds like it could be really useful for the Canucks right now. So that's an important part of the conversation around Lekker-Mackey for sure. To the lineup notes, Canucks, again, as I mentioned, they'll practice in Anaheim at 1 o'clock today. As you mentioned, yesterday, Neil Zaman cleared waivers en route to Abbotsford. He actually played in that game against San Diego yesterday for Abbotsford. So that does a couple of things. One, obviously, it opens up a roster spot for them to activate Dakota Joshua. It's possible he could debut as soon as tomorrow against Anaheim. We'll see. We'll probably get a much better read of that at practice today, but of course he spoke to the media for the first time since rejoining the team and skating on Friday, so it's all kind of pointing in that direction. Now they've opened up the roster spot. Derek Forbort returned to the lineup on Saturday as well. He was paired with Eric Brandstrom, so they shift Eric Brandstrom over to the right side. That makes Vincent Desharnais and Noah Juulsen both healthy scratches on the right side, and they rarely for this team they go with 4 lefties and 2 righties on the blue line.
Huge data point reflecting the organization's faith in and how well Eric Brandstrom has performed here.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't usually do it, right? Brandstrom was just a throw-in less than a month ago when the Canucks acquired him, and he's already playing ahead of Noah Juulsen, who was a 50-plus game regular for the Canucks last season, played 2 playoff games for the club.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Desharnais, who they gave a 2-year contract to an unrestricted free agency. I mean, I think it speaks volumes about sort of where what Brandstrom has done in terms of his contributions, but also I think speaks volumes about what this club is beginning to recognize as a real deficiency. And by the way, that their opponents are also beginning to realize as a real deficiency, which is just back end pace and the ability to move the puck. Teams are attacking it. We're seeing it every game now. And the Canucks have to keep some speed in the lineup to address it. This shows us that they're clear-eyed about that particular gap in sort of the composition or skill set of this roster, and that might have knock-on effects even beyond Brandstrom remaining in the lineup and you know, playing ahead of some guys that the club's been pretty invested in, but also in terms of what this club may be calling about on the trade market.
Yeah, and it seems likely that Eric Brandstrom is going to get a chance to run with this opportunity. As you said, a pretty telling data point about what the coaching staff thinks of him and his utility right now. I will also say Neil Zaman going down to Abbotsford instead of Arshdeep Bains. Not that we needed extra evidence for this. I think we've seen by the amount of run and the opportunity he's gotten, but obviously Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff pretty high on Arshdeep Bains, although of course he did get dropped down the lineup in favor of Pugh Suter in that one on Saturday.
So, and Jake DeBrus scored his first, right? But 50 minutes into that game, he didn't have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets the jam play at the side of the net, which you know, I like to see DeBrus operate in traffic, and then that goal was beautiful.
What a shot.
But Pugh Suter,
like, let's see that shot some more.
That would be nice. I'd like to see more shots.
Yeah.
But Pugh Suter gets two goals, and boy, oh boy, the moment he goes up into the top six, it's like, oh, right, this guy never makes a mistake. Always, his motor is literally always running. He wins a ton of battles, and he's, you know, skilled enough to compliment everybody, right? Like, he's skilled enough to compliment everyone in the top six. And, you know, when you sort of look at what he's done across, you know, a relatively large sample, like the last three seasons going into this year, I mean, this is a guy who produces offense at a top six rate, right? Like, he's got a higher goals per 60 clip, for example, than like Danton Heinen, right? Are you unimpressed by that? You seem unimpressed by
that. No, sorry. I wasn't super paying attention, to be honest, but wow, that's great. Wow. I'll be impressed.
I know you don't have to be. I was sort of trying
you
to...
You were like, pause for me to be wowed by that? Is that the idea?
No, I just realized, I was like, Jamie might not think Danton Heinen's a great goal scorer. Like, that would be fair. Did I just damn this guy with faint praise? Like, I was sort of doing a gut check on whether or not I'd messed it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, sort of a high-end second line rate scorer, Pugh Suter, over the course of his career. Now, I just sort of wonder, like, are we at a point where the club went out and brought in Sprong and DeBrusque and Heinen and Sherwood, and Sherwood's played really well. I think Heinen's been useful. I think Sprong's had his moments and DeBrusque has had his moments, right? But if I were to say the following to you, would you agree or disagree with the statement? All of the following guys who were here last season, Pugh Suter, Nils Höglander, Connor Garland, have looked like better top six compliments for Vancouver's star players than the unrestricted free agents the club brought in.
Than Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusque and Daniel Sprong.
And, throw in Sherwood, even though he's only played there occasionally. I mean...
Yeah, Connor Garland, definitely. Now, Höglander's been up and down, for sure.
Yeah, but Höglander's, I mean, he had a bad game.
Nobody from those UFAs has clearly separated themselves from that other class. Like, it's basically a big mix of guys roughly on equal footing.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting thing where it's like, we're only 10 games in, people are still acclimatizing themselves to new teammates and a sort of new, more up-tempo system and blah, blah, blah. But... It just feels like right now, we might get to a point where the optimal Canucks top six sort of forward alignment that we're all thinking about in our mind's eye either features zero or one of Vancouver's, many unrestricted free agent acquisitions. What would you have put the odds at that was how the first 10 games were going to play out?
Not high.
Back in September.
No, not a lot.
So it's just something I'm mindful of, especially in the wake of the Amon getting waived, because this also, holistically sort of fits together. If Amon's not on the team and Ratu's not called up, well, Pugh Suter has to play fourth line center.
Yep.
So, but, man, as a break glass in case of emergency option to get your top six going, and ultimately, given what we saw from him down the stretch in the playoffs, I don't know, man. This team might just need a battle winner with Suter's level of reliability and complementary offensive pop in the top six. It might just be one of those things that you can't avoid doing.
Last thing I want to mention on the lineup and roster front is, of course, they send Nils Amon down, and that they haven't activated Dakota Joshua yet from injured reserve, but they have the roster spot to do it. And we've been really tracking them, sending Erik Brännström and Arshdeep Bains down every chance they get, right, to try to juice what they're accruing in cap space every day. But it is important to note, Dakota Joshua, it's not as if they have to fit his cap on his salary on the cap, right? It's already there. When you go on IR, the team gets a roster spot, but they don't get any cap relief. So now, just by virtue of him getting healthy, or at least on the verge of being healthy and ready to play, and you send Nils Amon down, all of a sudden, even without any of the, sending your waiver exempt guys down on a day or on a semi-regular basis, per Puckpedia, they have $1.3 million in cap space, which, again, if they don't do any of those other aggressive moves, would be a hair over $5 million by the trade deadline. So cap situation, but just by virtue of Dakota Joshua getting healthy, takes a little boost for the Canucks as well, right? Because you're sending a salary down and you're not replacing it with anyone. Dakota Joshua's salary is already on the books.
Yep.
So creates a little extra cap flexibility for them and potentially in the future as well. Just a around the league standings update thing that I wanted to note here before we go to break. Connor McDavid, of course, the Canucks coming home after this road trip to play the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. And the news out of Edmonton today is that McDavid skating took part in an optional skate with his teammates. And afterwards, I believe, said that possible he'd be ready to go for the Canucks on Saturday. And wouldn't surprise me if he's pushing to get back for that one, right? A rematch of a playoff series, first meeting between the two teams that, you know, had a very eventful regular season series, then obviously a 7-game playoff series against each other last year. So wouldn't be surprising at all to see McDavid get back for that one. And of course, the Oilers have won a couple in a row without McDavid in the lineup. Okay, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. I want to get into the inbox a little bit and also just talk about how different is this team really from last year so far through 10 games. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.